columns and videos delivered to your inbox every morning. Register for the free Denver Sports Daily at 1043thefan.com.
Go to 1043thefan.com and subscribe to The Fan Daily for the latest columns, blogs, news, videos, and more sent directly to your inbox every weekday morning.
Stoke, I got to tell you, I can't stand an assumption that's being made right now involving the Broncos and the 15th overall pick. We keep hearing over and over from everyone just how deep this wide receiver class is. We've been hearing about it for months. And the sort of tone around this where the Broncos are picking at 15, it's, hey, because this, and we've all heard this, because this class is so deep, you don't have to draft one at 15. You can just grab one in the second round because there's so much value. I get that from a fundamental standpoint. But you and I were talking about Mel Kiper's latest mock draft at the end of last week. And in that mock draft, he does not have a wide receiver going until pick number 13, Jerry Jeudy. He gets selected by the San Francisco 49ers in Mel Kiper's most recent draft. And then you got Ruggs going 15 to the Broncos. But then after that, he's got CeeDee Lamb going 17 to the Cowboys. He's got T. Higgins going 19th to the Raiders. He's got Justin Jefferson as well in the first round going 21st overall to the Eagles. Then he's got Denzel Mims, your guy, out of Baylor, going 22nd to the Vikings. They need to replace Stephon Diggs. He's going 22nd. Chase Claypool, who, you know, I heard Mike Evans saying, hey, you can draft Chase Claypool in the second or third round. Third round? Mel Kiper has him going in the first round.
That guy's like 6'5", 230, and he runs like a 4'3". I mean, I don't know how he goes later than early second round. Kid from Notre Dame. I mean, yes. He's a specimen, certainly. So, yeah, you're not getting him in the third round.
And the Packers need a second receiver to pair with Devontae Adams. Do. So all in all, through the first 12 picks of the first round, crickets when it comes to wide receivers. By the end of the first round, Stoke, he has 7 wide receivers selected in the first 32 picks.
Yeah.
And the thing that's sort of bothering me is that this assumption that, like, these are specific individual human beings. They don't run around with a W and an R. They're humans. They're different. So to say that, hey, don't worry about it, you'll just grab one in the second round, that's basically saying that you believe that the 8th, 9th, or 10th best wide receiver is equal to the 2nd or 1st wide receiver with the Broncos will have an opportunity at 15. I'm not banging the table and standing on it and saying draft a wide receiver, but if you think you'll just be able to flippantly pass on one of these guys at the very top because the 8th best wide receiver is going to be equal to the 2nd, I just think that's a foolish way to look at this thing.
Yeah, that's very well said. I think when you look at the situation, look at back when they had the other great wide receiver class, and it was Mike Evans, it was Odell Beckham, it was Sammy Watkins, and then, you know, you're going to say, okay, let's pass on Mike Evans here early in the first round because this group is so deep. Let's go ahead and wait to the second round, and let's pick up that kid, Cody Latimer. Right, I mean, it just makes no sense, that argument of saying since it's so deep, let's just get us one in the second or third round. So you're going to pass on a Julio Jones to get you one in the second or third round, and you're going to say, well, that guy's going to be just as comparable as Julio Jones. No, that's a bad argument. Now, certainly, you can find some good quality receivers later on if you have a deep draft class, but there's a reason why a guy's going first in that group, and there's a reason why there's a guy going 10th or 11th. So if you love a guy, it doesn't matter if it's a deep class or not. You take the guy.
Right.
You take it. And you can't, because you just like, you know, like we're talking about with Phillip Lindsay, you can't project what December is going to look like in the football season. Just because Melvin Gordon might be the starter in September doesn't mean he's going to be the starter in November or October or December. Just because you look at a situation and you say, well, it's a deep class, that doesn't mean your guy that you like is going to be there in the second round.
Right.
He might be gone.
Right.
You can't project and say, that guy's going to be there in the second round. So let's pass on Jerry Jeudy because, you know what, we're going to wait on Claypool or we're going to wait on Mims and we're going to wait on whoever else. And, and all of a sudden all those guys get gobbled up and then now you're sitting there with nothing. So I think that's a poor way to look at it because it's a deep class. Let's just wait to the third round and grab one. Let's wait to the fourth round and grab one. You don't know who's going to be there. And you can't love everybody the same. You got to love some guys more than others. And what if your guys are gone? Are you just going to take somebody you don't like? I don't like that argument. I like the thought process of, look, if there's a guy, if Jerry Jeudy's there, you love him, you take him. If it's CeeDee Lamb and you absolutely love him and he's there at 15, you don't say, well, we love CeeDee Lamb and he's number one on our board, but we might be able to get us a good one in the second round at some point. So let's just pass on the guy that we love. That's a bad way to look at it.
Yeah, and I'm glad you're agreeing with me here because they're people. So you're falling in love with the player, not the position. And like you said, if CeeDee Lamb's sitting there and you love CeeDee Lamb and the four best tackles are off the board, like I assume that they are going to be, unless you look at Todd McShay's draft, we're gonna, mock draft, we're going to talk a little bit more about that tomorrow.
Todd.
And so it's like, would you rather have the number one or number two best wide receiver on the board? Because it's a position of need. Don't ever talk yourself out of the fact that the Broncos don't need a second wide receiver. Because it's not true. So if you have the fifth best tackle on the board, or you're looking at CeeDee Lamb or Jerry Jeudy or Henry Ruggs or someone like that, and they're the second best wide receiver on your board, gosh, I know we need offensive line help. But give me the second rated wide receiver over the fifth rated tackle, just because you're trying to overemphasize, you know, another position of need. And you need them both. You need them both. Yeah. But the Broncos, more than anything else, just need really good football players.
That's right. Just keep finding good football players, whether it's an offensive lineman, whether it's a wide receiver, whether it's a defensive lineman, whether it's a cornerback. Find me one of those positions and find me a good football player, and we'll be just A-okay. I think that's the bottom line here, is because you can't project 2 years down the road what this football team is going to look like. So right now we could say, man, we got to have a number two wide receiver. Well, if the right person's there, go ahead and take him. But if not, we'll manage. We'll figure things out. Like we talked about yesterday, Zach, there's a lot of stuff still left to happen in the NFL season, right? When you look at guys getting cut, guys that you could possibly trade for, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, to help that number two wide receiver spot. So you don't panic because you have a huge void there right now. You don't panic and say, well, we got to take a wide receiver at 15. Nope, don't do that. That would be the worst mistake that you could make. You look at your board and how you have guys ranked, and you take the best possible player available, and hopefully it's a, you know, one of those positions of great need when you look at and impact players, when you can have a defensive lineman right there in the middle of the field and a Javon Kinlaw, C.J. Henderson, or one of the tackles to play offensive line. Do we have I look at our group now, do we have a huge need at tackle right now? Is there like a glowing need just like right now we got a huge void there? No, I don't look at it that way. But next year, yeah, I mean, it could be a real possibility where we have a huge need at one of the tackle positions. And that's saying that, you know, our guy is going to stay healthy on the Juwan, James is going to stay healthy at the right tackle spot. And that's why I said we don't have a huge need there right now. And Bowles hopefully will play like he played the last 5 weeks of the season, just be a solid presence. But that doesn't say you don't take a tackle, because you don't know what your football team is going to look like in 2 years. I think they've done a good job in free agency of filling the holes, most of the holes, and not having a lot of glaring needs heading into the draft, and that will free them up to take the best possible player available. And like you said, Zach, just get the darn thing right.
Just get it
good
right.
Football players.
Just get good
football players.
Yep. Keep laying those bricks. Eventually, you're going to build a wall. Okay. In talking about these wide receivers, I wanted to. I love trivia. You know that.
You are a trivia. You know what?
I'm not some sort of expert. I just like love the idea of asking questions that you may not know the answer to. So I got a wide receiver trivia question for you.
For me, I'm awful at trivia.
Always say that. You always sandbag yourself, but every time, yes, you do. And then
I do pretty good.
And you do pretty good. Okay. You're just fearful of getting it wrong. And
am I? That's why. But I try to preach. Don't ever be afraid to fail. And here I am, afraid to fail. I think Zach, for me, you know, people like to make fun of me, but because I'll give like such a bad answer, it's just like ridiculous.
I've never heard you do that. Typically, anytime I leave the space open for you, and you have to fill it. Now, none of us get it right all the time, but you'd get pretty darn close most of the time. So,
all right, I'll give it a shot.
Okay, so here's a question: 3 different times in NFL history, a wide receiver was selected number 1 overall. The first time was back in 1964. A fellow by the name of Dave Parks from Texas Tech. He played for the 49ers. He's a 3-time Pro Bowler. The second time it happened was in 1984. You may remember this name, Irving Fryer.
Sure.
He's a pretty good player out of Nebraska. He played
for the Patriots.
That you're on it. I told you you're good at this.
Okay.
He ended up being a 5-time Pro Bowler. The last time it happened, it's after 1984. What wide receiver? It only happened 3 times. 64, 84, and it happened.
Just throw me the damn ball. Just throw me the damn ball.
You're on it.
Keyshawn Johnson.
That's right. That's right. 1996, coming out of USC, New York.
Or just give me the ball. What was it?
I think it was
his book. He had that book out.
I think it was just give me the damn ball.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow, that was him and Bill Parcells. I mean, that was a match made in heaven, right?
Yeah, you talk about different personalities and being a fly on the wall with some of those meetings. I would love it. Okay.
That's a good one. That's a good one. That was fun trivia from Zach Bond.
I like it. I like it. I'm gonna bring another one.
Are you doing trivia this year at
Old Chicago
spot? Old Chicago.
Apparently, the deal has been verbally committed to. So we'll see where we're at that time. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to getting back there. Stoke, ESPN put out NFL power rankings after the wave of free agency has crashed through. Where do the Broncos end up? And they gave 3 words to describe the current state of the roster. I'll bounce it off you next. Stoke, ESPN put out some way too early power rankings. I shouldn't even say they're way too early. They're just early. Way too early is before free agency. This is before the draft. It's still early, but we like power rankings. Why not? Brandon Stokely, are you with us?
I'm here.
Where do you think...
That was a short break.
It was a short break.
You got to give me a heads up on the short breaks. I thought I was coming back early.
Well, I'll just give you a heads up. 1 to 145, all short breaks.
Okay. Some are shorter than others.
Some are shorter than others. That's right. ESPN.
How long was I going for?
About 2.5 minutes.
No.
No, just kidding. It tends 5 seconds. ESPN put out early power rankings. And I said they're not way too early. Way too early rankings are before free agency. We have more information now. Are they early power rankings? Of course, but we love power rankings. So figured we'd chat about it here for a second. Where do you think the Denver Broncos landed on ESPN's power rankings?
ESPN power rankings, I put them at 22.
Gosh, holy moly. It seems like did you see this, by the way?
No, I haven't seen it. Nope.
Okay. That would involve you looking at the rundown. So,
you never send it to me anymore.
Dude, we have the document that's available to all of us.
Where?
Google Docs.
I don't know about all that stuff. I don't like that stuff. I prefer just not know.
Okay.
There you go.
Fair enough.
I don't like all those docs and Google Team and Google Docs and Team Snap and
meritocracies.
Yeah, meritocracies and all that meritocracy stuff. No.
Okay.
By the seat of your pants.
You said 22, and you're always pretty good at this. Prior to free agency, in ESPN's way too early power rankings, they had the Broncos as the 21st best team in the National Football League. Following free agency, the Broncos dropped. They have the Broncos at 23. So your 22 is right in between where ESPN had them before free agency and after free agency. 23rd. We are getting optimistic around here. But the rest of the media looks at the Denver Broncos sort of in the same light as they've been for the last couple years.
Yeah, I don't really understand it. I think they've done a good job in free agency. I try to be as, you know, unbiased as anybody when I look at the situation of the Denver Broncos. I think they filled some holes. They filled some needs. They've got some good, solid veteran players that have played at a high level. So I look at it. I tend to be optimistic about what they brought in with A.J. Boye, with Jarrell Casey, with Glasgow, Nick Varnett, the tight end, who else have we gotten?
I mean, you're, in total, you said Jarrell Casey, A.J. Boye, Graham Glasgow.
Hunter, Sam Martin. Who else? Anybody else?
You said Finette.
I think that's a solid group right there.
Yeah.
Would I like one more piece at the wide receiver position?
Oh, Melvin Gordon.
There you go. I knew I was missing somebody. So I think it's a good, solid group that's good football players and positions of needs for the Denver Broncos. So I don't know how you can look at their group that they brought in and feel a negative way about them. I just can't look at it and think negatively about the free agents and the trades that we've made. I don't know how you can do that. So I think they probably should have gotten better. So I put them around 22 or whatever, and now I think, you know, they probably should be around 17 or 18.
Yeah, and someone on the RamosLaw.com text line, and they didn't put their name on it, 927, throw your name on it, get a shout out. He said, it's odd because the Broncos finished the year at 17, and they're a heck of a lot better than last year, and we're in a heck of a lot better, than they were at the end of last season. I don't remember that power rankings, but it makes sense because power rankings get adjusted week to week. First of all, power rankings don't matter, but it's a good talking point.
Yeah.
Right. You know, when you win 4 or 5, you're going to crawl up that power ranking board, you know, when you're updating it week by week. But I wanted to say this, that, like, the last couple of years, we got to admit it. The national media has been right about the Broncos. The optimists around here are the ones who have been wrong. Guys like myself, I thought the Broncos were going to be a 9-7 football team this past year. You know, and at week whatever, they're, you know, 2-8 or whatever the heck they were. We were having a lot of fun with Adam Rank. He had him at 4-12. Remember that from NFL.com? We're like,
yeah,
this guy is a flat out idiot. But then they're 2-8, and you're like, like, we could get there. We could get there.
Can they even get to 4?
Can they get to 4?
What was the conversation then?
Man, that's what it felt like for a second. But it's just one of these things where is this the year? Is this the first time in a few years where the local optimism is the right one? It turns out to be the true projection.
Yeah, hopefully so. I like the pieces that they have. Obviously, a lot comes down to health. You look at a guy like Juwan James. Is he going to be available for more than 60-something snaps this year? You're going to need that guy. Going to need the presence of Bryce Callahan. And hopefully add a couple, you know, nice young pieces in the draft that can come in and play right away for you. And a lot will depend on your quarterback. You know, what do we have in our quarterback? We really don't know. We really don't know. I mean, we think that we have a good idea, and we hope that we have a good idea. We hope that he can build off of what we saw last year, but that was just such a small sample size for a quarterback, whether it was going to be good or bad, that we just don't quite know who Drew Lock is going to be this year in Pat Shurmur's system. Now, we can be optimistic about it, but I think most of it, obviously, is going to boil down to that position. How does that guy play? How does he handle the pressures? How does he handle the up and downs of the football season? How does he handle the adversity? All those different things that come with being the guy, come with being the starting quarterback. How will he handle that throughout the course of a 16-game season? And on top of all of that, he got to stay healthy.
Sure.
We saw it in preseason game, got injured, and next thing you know, they had to put him on IR. And so he misses half the season there. So
how about Bradley Chubb?
Bradley Chubb, another big one coming back for us. What is he going to look like coming off the ACL injury? And what will Von Miller look like? You know, we talked to Shelby Harris yesterday about Von Miller. I asked him, what do you think Von's got left in the tank? And Shelby thinks he's got a lot left in the tank. So I wouldn't expect him to say anything else. But what will he look like this year? So there's obviously question marks, but I think I can be optimistic about this group that they should be a better football team than what we've seen here the past few years.
Yeah, and as a couple of our RamosLaw.com texters are pointing out, it's not just about what the Broncos did. This is a league-wide snapshot being voted on by panel. It's about what the Raiders did as well. Like, the Broncos are not some solo act here. They're one of 32 teams. So, you know, did the Raiders get better in free agency? You're darn right they did. You know, they bring in Corey Littleton. They bring in Nick Kwiatkowski. They bring in Carl Nassib. They brought in cornerback Eli Apple. They brought in the safety John Heath. Malik Collins there for a D tackle. So they've retooled too. Like, we have a tendency, because we're so close to the situation, to like analyze the Broncos, what they did, and then resort their trajectory. But at the same time, their neighbors are trying to fix their lawn too.
Exactly, and they're thinking they got better also. And those rookies over there for Oakland, they had a really good rookie class. They're going to be going into their second year, and they're going to be hoping that their guys stay healthy and all the things that we just talked about also. So everybody, you know, you like to feel good about yourself after making moves in the offseason, and you like to project. It's just hard to do. It's a hard thing to do. Because, like you said, everybody's feeling pretty good about the moves that they made.
Right. Like, what fan base doesn't think they got better in free agency?
Patriots.
Well,
Patriots right now. They're all depressed over there in New England.
That's
true.
Puts
a big smile on everybody else's face.
That's true. And there's
I love that.
Wait, who is Steven? Who is that? That is Cliss. Okay. Yeah, but outside of, like, you know, five or six teams,
right, yeah.
The rest of the league, the fan base is like, hey, we got our Terrell Casey. We got our A.J. Boye. I mean, you look at a team like the Cardinals. You can look at them on paper and say, holy moly, these guys just retooled their roster with someone like DeAndre Hopkins and Jordan Phillips and guys
That's
like
right.
that. So, okay, interesting conversation. News broke last night. And by the way, remind me the three words that to describe the current state of the roster. We will get back to that because I think it's interesting. But to shift gears here, news broke last night. Stoke, I got to tell you, I about jumped out of my seat, and I think we collectively needed this news so badly. I'll tell you what it is next. This gives me goosebumps, Stoke. I'm being dead serious.
I'm being dead serious, too.
At guard, 6'6", from the University of North Carolina, Michael Jordan!
Oh, you did good. That's good. I like that.
Oh, dude, I love it. Me and my high school, I had a high school teammate. You're going to have to clip this. For a sec, you're gonna have to clip this, Steven. A high school teammate, Jeff Dieheimer, who was a great player, 6'6", ambidextrous around the hoop, 1,000-point college scorer, and he used to always play this song. I love this song, and we used to play it before games. Even, you know, this is 10 years after, you know, that song was being played in the United Center. So I just have I just love it. Such a close association with those memories. But we play it. Thanks, Steven. But we play it because
thanks,
new.
Steven.
Thank you, Steven. Like, you're the worst, Stoke. News broke.
I can't help it. Sometimes I just got to be the worst.
News broke last night that I believe the sporting world needed oh so badly right now. And it was officially broken by Andrew Marchand of the New York. Oh boy, I better get this right here.
Don't screw this one up.
Because the last time we did,
we had Johnny on.
Try again.
That was him. What was his name?
Paul Schwartz for the New York Post. I introduced him from the Daily News, and he hit
no.
me.
Try again.
Oh my God!
Oh, man, good times.
Yeah, good times. Good times. Andrew Marchand, God, I think it's the New York Post. I'll find it here in a second. But he broke the news, and this was being campaigned about on social media. Yeah, New York Post. It was being campaigned by LeBron James and others for ABC and ESPN to move up the highly anticipated 10-part Michael Jordan Chicago Bulls documentary, The Last Dance. It was initially slated to be released in the month of June, but last night the news broke. They are releasing this thing here in 3 weeks, and we're all going to be in the house. There's no sports happening, and what this is, if you're not wise to this, they had all this footage, okay, from the final season in Chicago, the 1998 season, and they had compiled it, and then from my understanding of it, there was some sort of rift between the documentary filmmaker and the publishing group or whatever, and all this footage never got released. It's never been seen, and it is called The Last Dance, The Last Year, the three prong of that three-peat from...
just got chills.
I'll tell you, 96, yep. 97, and 98.
Wow. And this didn't understand. See, that's good, Zach, because I didn't understand why it's taken so long for this to come out. Like, I mean, what's going on
here? This is 20 years after the fact.
Right.
So it's almost like, our documents, American documents, sometimes they get sealed for like a certain period before the Information Act lets it get released.
It's classified. Like, it's classified,
right.
Info.
And there is. There's documents on Martin Luther King Jr. and things like that that are going to be released. I think the year is 2027, like CIA investigation into him that no one's seen. But in 2027, they get to be released. Very interesting, by the way. And I'm not even going to get into it now, but or ever. It feels like that there's all this archived footage that we've never seen. Dennis Rodman, Steve Kerr, Scottie Pippen, MJ, Phil Jackson, the dynamics that play the very end of this epic run. And I am just wildly fascinated on what these tapes are going to uncover.
Yeah, and they've been advertising this thing for a year and a half now. They started advertising this thing Christmas of like 2018. This thing has been going on forever, so it's finally going to be here, and it's moved up. So I'm really excited to see what it is. I mean, it's going to be great. I mean, it's the perfect time to unveil something like this.
Right. If you ever wanted eyeballs on your product, there's never been a point. And this is an actual statement. There's never been another point in human history where the television has been around, on-demand control of that TV has been around, and everyone at home at the same time. This is the most unique set of circumstances, which is why the NFL, the NBA, WWE is saying, hey, take our product and ingest it for free. Because we know you're home right now, and they're not doing it to be a good Samaritan. It's good practice. You know, let them get familiarized with their product, understand what this platform is. Then when you take it away from them, it's almost like, hey, sleep on this mattress for 100 days. And then after 100 days, you can give it back if you don't like it. Well, after 100 days, you're going to like that mattress, that new mattress. You're not going to want to give it back and sleep on that old box spring or whatever you got. It's sort of
sleep on a box spring? I wouldn't recommend sleeping on a box spring.
It's sort of like that approach. Like, let me get my customer used to our product and then take it away from them.
Yes. This thing has been advertised for a year and a half. Do you realize that, Zach? Since December of 2018, it's been advertised. And so
I didn't realize it was that long.
Yes,
no.
Yes. I just remember when they first started doing it, I'm like, oh, this is going to be great to watch here in a few months. And they're like, we're unveiling it, the first of 2020 or something like that. Like, wait, what? That's over a year away. What is happening here? Why is it taking so long for it to do it? And why are they advertising it so early? But it's going to be awesome. And you see all the people that they've interviewed throughout the course of it. And different celebrities,
Bob
and different
Costas,
people. Yes.
Barack Obama.
It's going to be great. It's going to be must-see TV. And the sooner the better. So you said, when is it coming out?
The start date looks like it's going to be Sunday, April 19th.
Okay, so a few weeks away.
Yeah, that is 3 weeks away from right now. I can't wait. Inject it right into my veins. I hope, and I'm guessing they're going to release it one episode at a time, but which is probably good because much like Tiger King, I'll just blow through it.
Right, right, yep. Yep, and I'm rocking and rolling with Ozark, so I'm loving life right
now.
It got me another good show.
Stoke!
What? Dude.
We started Ozark last night.
Yes, you love it, huh?
I'm already into it. It's hooking its claws in me. We are on our third episode.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You're in, baby. You're in.
It's good stuff.
It's great.
My wife said, she made a good correlation. She said, it's sort of like... What did she say? Billions. Did you ever watch Billions?
I started watching it and then just never really got going. Had other stuff going on and kind of dropped the ball on it. But I do want to try to get back to that.
Yeah, she said it's a cross between Billions,
yes,
and, what's the other show with the short actor with the bald head? Oh, my God, I'm forgetting it.
Those. Danny DeVito?
No, buddy. Though that's the profile I just threw out there. I forget, but we're into it, and I'm looking forward to watching some more of it tonight. It's good stuff.
I love it.
Good stuff. Okay, we have a really special conversation that we're about to have. Tim Connolly, the Nuggets team president of basketball operations. What is it like at the very top of an NBA organization right now? What is the uncertainty like? What are the players up to? How closely is he monitoring that? We'll ask all of those questions directly to Tim Connolly next. Once again, our guy, good friend of the show, maybe our best friend of the show when it comes to team executives here in Denver, Nuggets team president of basketball operations, Tim Connolly, joins us. Tim, appreciate your time, first of all, and really appreciate you joining us here once again. Let me just start off with a broad question here. What has the last month been like for you personally?
First of all, I'm blushing right now that we're BFFs.
That's it, man.
That You're awesome. Our guy, Tim.
I love that. It's unprecedented, and certainly the impact on the sports world has been obvious and concrete, but societally, you know, just trying to figure out the best way we can all get through this and how we can all be good teammates. A lot of vulnerable people right now, and how we can just help. It's something that none of us ever been through before. And I want to be as proactive as possible to ensure there's as little sickness and death as possible.
Tim, thanks again for joining us, buddy. How often, like, is y'all as an organization staying in contact with the players? Is it daily? Is it every couple of days? What's that process like?
Yeah, I would say every couple of days we talk to everybody. But you know, you talk to all these group messages, emails, texts. Then you try to reach out individually to make sure you're not missing anything. As hard as it is physically, you know, obviously, Brandon, you played at a high level. To not have the facility to go to at all is challenging. To not be coached, to not get in the gym and just shoot hoops is hard. And then there's the social isolation. Some of our guys have families. Some are just here by themselves. So how do you keep those guys as positive and forward-thinking as possible? Sometimes it's a basketball message. Most times it's not. Sometimes it's a movie. Sometimes it's a stupid meme that we're all sharing. But anything to stay connected and let these guys know that they have a whole team of people that care about them and want to ensure that they're doing as good as they possibly can.
Tim Connolly hanging out with us here on Stokely and Zach. How are these guys supposed to maintain their basketball sharpness? I mean, I know to a certain degree it's like riding a bike, but you play at that high of a level. These guys don't have the same resources that they had at their fingertips just a month ago. Tim, even around the city of Denver, I don't know if you've seen this. Like, I went to go shoot by myself at a park. They've removed the rims right from the backboards, literally.
Yeah, I saw it the other day. They had police tape around it's a Parker off Spear around the playground and basketball rim. I said that's tough to see. You know, it's challenging, and they're not going to be in basketball shape. But our strength conditioning staff does a great job of getting them equipment, of having video classes, of sending them different ideas. I just literally, as we're speaking now, a player texted me his workout for today that I could maybe get through four of them right now. so it's unfair to expect these guys to be ready to play. It's the same problem 20 and other teams are facing. And while we never want to lose sight of how important the competition is and how important our team is, and we really think we have a chance to make real noise, you know, when and if we return this season, it's all about, you know, keeping these guys as healthy, both in mind and body, as possible.
Has there been any kind of communication from the league, Tim? And we're visiting with Nuggets team president Tim Connolly. Has there been any communication from them that, you know, when you do get back going, will there be a little bit of, I don't want to say training camp, but a little bit of a couple weeks to get everybody back going, and then the regular season will start up again? Or what has that communication been like?
The league's been fantastic. They've been so proactive. The guys really not being afraid to step out there and do what's best for the league. But I think they're at the mercy, like all of us, of what our federal, state, and local government's going to tell us. I'm sure they're working on numerous contingency plans, but right now their messaging has just been consistent. Well, let's just do whatever we can to make sure we're helping stop the spread and being a good communal teammate.
Obviously, Tim, I won't hold you to this, but do you, at the end of the day, think that we'll have NBA basketball to finish this season in some way, shape, or form?
I sure hope so, but I think, you know, I just want to see some small return to normalcy. Some of these numbers are so staggering, and some of the people that have been impacted, both from a health perspective and financially, I mean, the poor people in the service industry, you know, you have a good bar or restaurant and overnight you got to shut down. Some of these people that are keeping the economy going, obviously the first responders and doctors and nurses and the people that clean and operate hospitals. That's where my concern is. You know, as a fan, I sure hope there's sports are back, because if they're back, that's reflective of a society that's getting back on its feet as well.
Tim, looking at on the court, kind of pre-All-Star break and post-All-Star break, you know, didn't quite look like the same basketball team. Struggles a little bit here as of recent. What do you think's been the difference between, you know, coming back from the All-Star break?
That's a great question. I don't know. I mean, we certainly weren't playing the brand of basketball that we had come accustomed to. Since the All-Star break, we were playing like a 500 team. That's not going to get it done. Over 82 games, good teams, great teams, in between teams. They hit stretches where they play really well and hit stretches where they don't perform the same level. We were concerned. We weren't overly concerned. I think Coach Malone and staff do a great job at quickly addressing things. I think we knew the areas that were leading to those struggles, and we felt as if we're a pretty resilient group that we can address those things and move on. But the way we were playing prior to this suspension season certainly is not good enough or not up to par to the team we think we can be, and we've shown we're capable of being over the last several years.
Tim Connolly, president of basketball operations for the Denver Nuggets, dropping by here on Stokely and Zach. Do you think, Tim, that regardless of how this thing finishes, that – this season, I think back of two, I believe it was the 1999 season. It was the first year after Jordan retired, after that third championship, and there was a lockout. It was a shortened season. I want to say the regular season was 50 games. The Spurs went on to beat, I believe it was the New York Knicks in the finals. But that season was looked at as sort of like with an asterisk to it. No disrespect to the future champion of this year, whoever that turns out to be. Do you believe that in time we'll look back at this very unique stretch of time and have an asterisk next to this NBA season?
Shoot, I mean, if we win, there'll be no asterisk.
You're right. No asterisk, baby.
There'll be a heck of a hangover, but no asterisk. It's a good question. I don't know. I can't predict the future, and obviously, nor can the NBA League office, but what's it look like when we return to play? There's so many unknowns, and I don't envy our leaders right now, because they're as much as many experts as we always have, nobody really predicted the level of what we're seeing presently. So I'm not sure. Good question. I think a lot of it depends on how similar it looks when we get back out there. But I'm just, you know, again, I think any sports, I mean, not having Rockies opening day, you know, I'm an Orioles fan, not watching their first series. I think, you know, when we all could use a little distraction, and I think when those distractions in the forms of sports are back out there, I think it's the best part is that's a sign that we're starting to get our footing a little bit and maybe turn the tide on this awful virus.
Yeah, I know that, you know, people were glad that the NFL was continuing with free agency, and obviously that's a lot different than playing games. And whenever you can get back on the basketball court, when you get back on the baseball field and start doing those things, that means we're heading in the right direction, and everybody's in, can't wait for that and anticipating that. Tim, talk about Michael Porter Jr., what you've seen from him this year.
Yeah, I'm really proud of Mike. You know, he's been through so much, essentially played two games of basketball in 2 years, and those two games – his back was barely functioning. I thought he had that ankle injury, you know, a month and a half ago, wherever it was. He was playing a very high level of basketball, contributing to a good team. He's had a hard time regaining some of that rhythm, not unexpectedly. You know, when you leave, you're playing well, you get hurt, you try to jump back into a team that's you know, fighting for home court in the Western Conference. It's not always easy. I think you see a guy who's supremely talented, see a guy that has had very limited basketball the last couple of years. I think you see a guy that surprises people with his size, his ability to rebound, his basketball acumen. And all in all, we're really proud of how far he's come, and we're confident he's going to be one of our real building blocks going forward.
Tim, I have an opinion question for you, and I don't think there's a right or wrong answer to this thing. But obviously one of the ideas that was supposed to be the norm that we actually never got to because the league got suspended so quickly is playing in an empty arena. I've seen two different mindsets about this. One, that, hey, if we can't play in front of our fans, then we shouldn't be playing the games. The other side is, of course, hey, we need to play the games. Let's crown a champion. And the people need it as well, even if they can't be there. Would you be open to playing empty arena games?
Sure. I think when you're in unprecedented times and uncharted waters, which we certainly are right now, anything has to be on the table. Is it ideal? Absolutely not. I'm a fan first and a guy who works in the front office second. Some of my best moments in life has been as a fan. But if putting fans in the arena could potentially become a harmful situation, then let's not do it for the time being. Let's listen to scientists and doctors who make these recommendations. I don't know how you guys feel. I always tell myself, you know, I'm a big sports guy, obviously working it, but I said, you know, as much as I love sports, I'm not obsessed with it. It's not going to define my happiness, and I hope it never does, but man, I miss sports. I miss all types of sports, whether it's obviously NBA, but the Rockies, the Orioles, turning on an Arsenal game. It's crazy. The NCAA tournament is my favorite event in the world.
Sure, same.
So if you told me that the Orioles are going to play the Rockies with no fans, but I could watch from my sofa, that's game on. You know, at least it gives us a bit of a distraction. It's not ideal. It's going to take away a lot of what makes these games special. And I think as the athletes, and Brandon, you could probably certainly have the best commentary on it. I think it'd be really weird.
Sure.
But when these guys, I've seen tons and tons of pickup basketball, seen tons of inter-squad scrimmages. Once the competitive juices kick in, these guys get after it.
But
it'll be fun to watch.
And I'll say this, Tim, as an Orioles fan, you guys are used to empty arena games.
that's true. When I grew up, we were pretty good, but they're not exactly packing the house right now.
Tim, would it take away a little bit of the home court, home field advantage if no fans were, being able to attend games?
Absolutely. The referee sport is human, and they're often criticized and sometimes for good reason, but the job's impossible because unless they bat 1,000, you're only pointing out when they got it wrong. And I would think the best refs in the world are impacted by the emotions of a home arena.
Sure.
I think, you get the home whistle. That's in any sport. You get more strikes called at home. You get, it's, So you take away that, you take away the ability for teams to feed off the fans. I think for sure, I think, you know, it would be really hard for the players, but, you know, once they start talking, once the competitive juices, which all these guys have, kicks in, then it's these guys grew up playing pickup basketball and playing against buddies. But it would not be ideal, and hopefully it's, if it is the norm in the short term, it's something that we only see in the very short term.
Yeah.
Columns and videos delivered to your inbox every morning. Register for the free Denver Sports Daily at 1043thefan.com.